This podcast is brought to you by Square. Your restaurant runs best when everything and everyone works together. Square's integrated point-of-sale system offers one central place to keep cash flowing, reach more diners, and operate smarter. Square has the trusted restaurant tools and solutions to serve you, your staff, and your customers now and in the future, no matter how your business evolves. The future needs your restaurant. Get there with Square. Learn more at square.com/audiology.
Count on the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts to recommend the best products for your vehicle and budget. Get maximum cooling system performance for 10 years or 300,000 miles with Peak Long Life Universal Premixed Antifreeze and Coolant. Save $7 after mail-in rebate, plus get 2x O Rewards points. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today. O'Reilly. Limit supply. See store for details.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Dekel Quant. Dekel is a personal trainer, competitor, broadcaster, entrepreneur, and philanthropist from the Bahamas. On the program, we discuss her fitness journey, how often she trains, what her diet consists of, and much more. Dekel is coming up after the break. I'm Ed Robinson, and you're listening to The Robinson Show.
Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. It's the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data Q3 2022 in Cox serviceable areas. Learn more at cox.com/internet. Mobile phone companies say they offer home internet, but if their internet comes from a cell phone network, you should know it's just phone internet, not home internet. Keep your home up to speed with Cox. Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. Cox is the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data Q3 2022 in Cox serviceable areas. Visit cox.com/internet for details.
Operators, start earning points with Lamb Weston's all-new Potato Perks app. Simply download the app and start earning points immediately. And right now, as a bonus, get 500 points free just for registering, plus a product rebate up to $100. Redeem your points for goods for your business, like back-of-house smallwares, custom marketing materials, and more. Register today and get your free 500 points and a rebate up to $100. Visit go.lamweston.com/potatoperks to download.
Business today looks nothing like it did yesterday. While it's more unpredictable, its possibilities are endless. At ADP, turning unpredictability into an advantage is what we do. Using data-driven insights, we design HR solutions to help businesses work better, smarter, so they can think beyond today and find even more success tomorrow. HR, time, talent, benefits, payroll. ADP, always designing for people.
When you stay at a Vrbo, you always get the whole home. The whole upstairs, the whole downstairs, and the whole nap room. Only whole vacation homes, always all yours. Book on the Vrbo app.
Cox Internet is faster and has more reliable download speeds than 5G home internet. It's the real home internet you're looking for. Based on Cox analysis of Ookla speed test intelligence data Q3 2022 in Cox serviceable areas. Learn more at cox.com/internet.
We all make more than 35,000 decisions a day. Most are small, but some can be life-changing.
When it comes to taking care of yourself, the most important choices can be hard to make. Like having a tough conversation instead of ignoring a buddy's call.
Or being there for support. Not assuming things will just get better.
Or fighting through challenges rather than giving up.
And while we all face thousands of choices every day, there's one that can make all the difference. Today, make the decision to be there for the veterans in your life, for your community, for yourself. Learn more at betheforveterans.com.
And those sex Barbie, we're going to start with, I'm going to explain to you what we're doing today. We've got 8 movements. We're going to start with our warm-up, and then we're going to dive right into our first 2 movements. All right. Here we go. You are prepared at home as well. All right, so we're going to start our warm-up. You can go back. I'm going to position. Start with arm swings.
Yeah.
Up and down. 1. Good. 2.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. That audio was courtesy of Nikhel Quant and her exercise show that she has on her YouTube channel, and certainly having a lot of fun in her exercise and in the fitness journey. And she's definitely had a journey from then and currently until now, as she's not just a personal trainer and a lifestyle expert, but she's also an entrepreneur. And let's welcome her to the program. As I mentioned earlier, personal trainer, philanthropist, also entrepreneur by way of the Bahamas. Let's welcome her to the program, Nikhel Quant. Nikhel, welcome to the program and Happy New Year.
Hi, Happy New Year. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. You have a very interesting story, how you got into the world of fitness. How did your fitness journey begin?
So my fitness journey began when I was 14, so 15 years ago, and it started kind of on accident. I was always an athlete in high school and stuff, but my mom passed in 2008 from breast cancer, and my brother, who was really into fitness at the time, he was off in college. He kind of invited my dad to tag along to the gym with him. He had came home for, you know, the funeral and everything. So he was in the gym, and he kind of, like, dragged my dad to join him. And my dad kind of dragged me. And honestly, I've been into fitness since then. It became literally a part of my life, a part of me and my dad's life. He's still very much into, you know, fitness and working out as well. And so that just kind of started what is now a career in fitness.
Wow, that's an interesting journey that you've had up until this point. And my condolences on the loss of your mother. And you mentioned about, you're welcome. And I want to stay just with the Bahamas for a moment. You mentioned that you've always been an athlete. And when I think of the Bahamas, the first sport that comes to my mind is track and field. And during your growing up on the island, did you ever participate in track and field, or did you play other sports growing up?
So, yeah, so you're not alone. Most people think, most Caribbean countries, you think about track. Track is definitely our number one, at least our, you know, most known sport. We have a lot of athletes that excel in track. So, yes, I ran track, but I went to one of those schools where it's very a Caribbean thing, too, where if you're good in one sport, you're going to go and play every other sport, too. So I literally played every single sport. The only sport that I did not do great at was basketball. I tried it a few times, and it just wasn't for me. But I actually gravitated towards volleyball. I was pretty good at track, but volleyball was I would say my favorite. So I actually played college volleyball for 2 years as well after high school. But yeah, so I did play a little bit of everything, ran a little track, soccer, softball, all that good stuff.
I want to stay just with track and field for a moment. You mentioned about how track and field is the number one sport throughout much of the Caribbean. For those that have never experienced the track and field competition in the Bahamas, how do you describe it to them? Because from watching it, it always has like this carnival feel or this carnival atmosphere to it, just watching a lot of not just different schools, but just different like competitors go up against one another. Can you describe what a track and field atmosphere is like in the Bahamas?
It is very hard to describe, but the Bahamas, we are very I don't want to say prideful, but we are, you know, like when we have people that were out there, like from a spectator standpoint, like you said, it is very much a party. Like you have DJs in the stadium, you have people, you know, getting everyone excited. You have performances. You know, it's an event. It's not just, you know, we're going to go watch people run around a track. It is definitely an experience. Even when I was younger, so I didn't compete. Obviously, I didn't run when I was older. Would have been high school, elementary school. But even just being out there on the track at that young age, you just feel this energy. Like you said, it's just a different space. But yeah, I mean, I like to say when you go to a track meet as a spectator, it's like a party. You know, you go with your friends, you plan to have a great time, you scream your head off. I mean, a lot of times you end up cheering for people that, you know, you didn't plan to go there and cheer for. Just because the energy is, you know, it's that on fire.
Awesome. And so it's always a festive time in the Bahamas, and especially when you have other countries in the Caribbean like Jamaica, and, of course, there's mm-hmm. Barbados and Trinidad and so on and so forth. So I'll tell you what, never mm-hmm. a dull moment in the Bahamas. Dave, mm-hmm. with the sport of basketball, you mentioned that you did play basketball in high school, and you weren't very good at it, but I know the NBA is starting to see an emergence of players coming from the Bahamas with Buddy Hield and DeAndre Ayton. How is the NBA, we talked about how track and field has been embraced in the Bahamas, but how have Bahamians embraced NBA basketball?
Oh, they have definitely, we've definitely embraced it. It's funny, I actually grew up with, like, Buddy was maybe a year older than me in school. So, and he was one of those athletes where, you know, he excelled in basketball. And so he did a little bit of everything else, too. Definitely an all-around athlete. And so I think for, like, my generation especially, like, watching him make it to the NBA was huge. Because it's like, yeah, we played sports with him. Like, he was in the gym with us. We knew him personally, too. So, and really he was the first, you know, to make it on that grand scale. And we kind of watched, you know, he has a great story too, right? He came from very humble beginnings, you know, super small island in the Bahamas. So, you know, we're always proud. Like I said, we're a prideful country, like whether it's a local meet or, you know, the highest of platforms that an athlete can be on, we celebrate them. And so, you know, there's, if you drive around town, especially from the town where he's from in 8 Mile Rock in Grand Bahama, you'll see photos of him, billboards of him. There's sports lounges named after him. Like, it's a big deal, you know. So the country definitely, you know, they bring him down every so often. They have Junkanoo rush outs at the airport when he lands. Like, it's a big, you know, big celebration. Same thing for Shawnee. Same thing for Stephen Gardner. It's, you know, we celebrate our athletes that make it to the top, for sure.
Awesome. And indeed, the Bahamas is definitely enjoying their renaissance right now, not just with track and field, but most importantly in the world of basketball. All right, well, let's talk more about you now, DeKal. So you talked about your fitness journey and, you know, your brother being away from college, always working out, your dad keeping in shape as well, and, of course, the loss of your mother. But you know, with fitness, it's a discipline. When was the moment that you were like, you know what, I can do this. I can begin competing in competitions like this. Did you happen to go to a competition, or was it your brother that encouraged you, or maybe a friend? How did the whole fitness bug, why should I say, how did the competition bug hit you?
Yeah, so my brother had competed, I want to say, maybe 2 years before I decided to. And I don't remember even watching him compete. No, but I know that he did compete. But I had been in the gym for, I don't know, at that point, maybe 7 years before I decided to actually compete. And what actually made me consider it, I mean, people had kept telling me I should for years. I finally graduated college, but my last year of college I did a beauty pageant, which is very outside of my, like, comfort zone. I don't know. I can't even tell you what made me do it, but I decided, you know, it's my last year. I'm going to go out, you know, I'm going to do something that that I wouldn't typically do, but I think it'll be good. One of my roommates nudged me to kind of do it, and I gave in. I did it, and I won it. And my favorite part of it was actually, you know, you do the question, you do the swimsuit, you do the ball gown, all that stuff. My favorite part was the swimsuit. Like, I felt so alive on stage, and I was like, well, if I could do that, I could do a bodybuilding competition because I'm already working out. I'm already in pretty good shape. And what I really liked about training for the show was that it gave me kind of a goal for my training because up until then, you know, I was an athlete, so I worked out and I kept in shape for sports. But I didn't play my last 2 years of college, so I was really just honestly working out just for, you know, it was a part of my lifestyle at that point. But what competing did was it gave me this end goal or this purpose or more of a purpose for my training. And I actually really liked that. So I started doing my research. And honestly, my first show I did was my first time actually attending a full bodybuilding competition and actually seeing how everything worked, the backstage experience, all of that. And so once I did it that first time, it was just, you know, that desire to keep getting better and to keep going for more.
Awesome. And then definitely that gave you the tools and gave you the fire that you needed to compete, starting off, as you said, being in a beauty pageant in college, and then after that, attending that competition, and that gave you the fuel to your fire to what you currently do. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, fitness and bodybuilding is a whole discipline within itself, not just with the training, but also with the diet as well. So I wanted to know, how often do you train? Like, how many hours and days a week do you train?
So it varies. Like, right now, I'm not actively preparing for a show. So I train about 45 minutes to an hour, 6 days a week. If I'm getting ready for a show, it would be about 2 hours, 6 days a week, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours, 6 days a week, just because I have to bump up cardio when I'm actually getting ready for a show. So that can tack on an extra 45 minutes to an hour most days. But, yeah, I mean, it's – but even before I started competing, that was my regular would have been between 5-6 days a week, between an hour to an hour and a half. So the biggest change, I would say, between, like, my life pre-competing versus post was, like you said, the nutrition, the diet, just becoming a lot more strict and intentional with that aspect.
I want to stay, again, just with training for a moment. What are your favorite mm-hmm. body parts to train, and what are the body parts you don't like training?
Ooh. I feel like this changes month to month, but right now my favorite is legs. I wouldn't say my least favorite thing to do in the gym is cardio. I don't think I know many people that actually enjoy cardio, but yeah, I would say I love legs. Legs and back are probably my favorite. Maybe cardio and shoulders, my least favorite. But, yeah, it changes month to month.
Okay, fair enough. And I mentioned, again, we talked about the training, and we have to talk about the diet because those two things go hand in hand. So what does your diet normally consist of? Does it consist of mainly chicken and fish, and you throw a little fruits and vegetables? What does your diet consist of?
Again, it's different depending on if I'm getting ready for a show or not. If I am getting ready for a show, it's definitely high protein. I don't ever cut carbs out completely, but I do manipulate them during prep so they get kind of low close to my shows. But I stay away from a whole lot of added sugar. I may have a little bit of sugar from fruit, like blueberries, but no actual added sugars in. I do keep salt and sodium, but yeah, just really sugar. I try to avoid any added sugars, so I don't do a whole lot of fruits. My greens of choice are spinach and green beans, but those are just the ones that I feel like I could stomach the best. And off season, I'm definitely not as strict, but my proteins pretty much stay the same. I do chicken breast, I do fish, I do shrimp, every now and then ground turkey as well. And yeah, jasmine rice and red potatoes are my carbs of choice. And I usually do like mixed veg or spinach and green beans, like I said. So I keep it pretty simple. I find like once I like something, I can eat it repeatedly. So yeah, and then in off season, I tend to, you know, indulge a bit more as well. So I'll have my sushi every now and then. I'll have cocktails every now and then versus in when I'm in season or getting ready for a show. I kind of cut those things out for that 16 to 20 weeks that I'm getting ready.
Okay, I want to stay just with diet for a moment. What are some of your favorite foods that you enjoy eating, dieting and when you're not?
So when I am dieting, definitely shrimp. I love rice, so shrimp and jasmine rice would be probably my top if I'm, like, in competition prep or getting ready for a show. When I'm not, I will usually lean towards, like, sushi and a good burger. Those are my top two.
Okay, awesome. And, again, I just want to stay with the diet part for a moment. You mentioned that you enjoy eating fruit, but not too much because natural sugars that comes with it. But I know a lot of competitors, they have their favorite cheat meals. So I have to ask you this, what are some of your favorite cheat meals?
Favorite cheat meals? I think sushi, a good burger. Yeah, those are my two. I'm not, honestly, I used to be really bad with, not bad, but I used to be, right after a show, I'd go and I'd eat like everything that I felt like I couldn't eat during my prep. I'm a big snacker too, so sometimes I would even opt for like, you know, a bag of chips or like sour candy, stuff like that, like after a show. But the last couple of years I haven't been, I don't know, I haven't been wanting them as much, but sushi has definitely been a staple for me. Sushi and a really good, like, really good homemade burger. Those are my favorite cheat meals.
You mentioned about your cheat meal, sushi and a burger. What I looked up was that of something that is very, well, something that is a staple of Bahamian cuisine is conch. Can you explain to the listeners what conch is and do you enjoy eating it?
Sure. So conch is, the best way to describe it is it's a sea snail. So it is seafood. I do, so 1 year, my second year competing, I would eat conch every cheat meal. So my coach had programmed one cheat meal a week into my regimen. And so I'd usually have it on Fridays. And I think that I ate so much of it that I had to take a break from it. But I would eat a conch burger every Friday for almost like 8 weeks. And so I do enjoy eating it. I haven't ate it in a little while because it is kind of high in cholesterol, but the best way to describe it, again, it's like a sea snail, so it has a chewy texture. We cook it in a lot of different ways. The most popular way to eat it is fried. One of the most popular ways to eat it is fried. We also do it in a salad as well, like a fresh, you have to do it with fresh conch, though. Chop it up with herbs, lime, onion, tomato, and you eat it as like almost like a ceviche type dish. And then you also have cracked conch, which is where you can freeze it and then tenderize it, batter it, and deep fry it, like how you would do like a fried chicken. So it has that like light batter on it. That's one of the popular ways to eat it as well. And then I liked it as a conch burger, so you do that same process of tenderizing, battering, frying it, but then you put it onto like a bun with your lettuce, tomato, tartar sauce, all that good stuff. That's my favorite way to eat it, or it was for a while. But I also like a good cracked conch. Usually you serve it with like French fries, or some people serve it with peas and rice. But it is a very heavy. If you're having it fried, it's going to be heavy. Some people do steam it as well, curry it. So there's a lot of ways you can eat it. But I would say conch salad and cracked conch are probably the most popular ways that we eat it here in the Bahamas.
Awesome. Thank you so much for explaining that, not just to me, but to the listeners out there. And while we've mentioned about training and the diet, another element of preparing for these competitions is vitamins and supplements. Do you take any vitamins and supplements?
Yeah, I keep it pretty simple. So my brother, my same brother that got me into fitness, actually has a supplement retail company here in the Bahamas. So he has three locations here in the Bahamas. So comparable to like a GNC, a vitamin shop, he has that sort of store. So he resells or retails supplements, vitamins, wellness products, that type of stuff. So what I keep in my rotation pretty much is my multivitamin, a woman's multivitamin. I do vitamin C daily as well. And then off and on, I do collagen. I haven't been super consistent with taking it, but I try to be. And I do protein as well. Not so much when I'm getting ready for shows, because I tend to eat my, you know, my protein goals in prep, because I'm eating a lot more meals. But in off season, I don't eat as much. So I tend to supplement more with the protein shakes in off season, just to make sure that I'm getting enough protein in to maintain my muscle.
Awesome. And, you know, we talked about the training and the diet, and then we recently touched on the vitamins and supplements. I want to ask you now about competition day. Can you describe mm-hmm. what a day is like in, on the day of the competition, just in terms of getting outfits ready, maybe some music for the routine, or just working out? Like, what's a typical competition day like?
Okay. Competition day. So usually I travel for a lot of my shows. So I would travel. I try to get into wherever I'm going at least 2 days before the show. Check-ins are usually the night before. So if the show is on a Saturday, you'd have check-in and registration on the Friday. The final workout is usually 2 days before the show as well. So I may do like a very light workout once I land or get into wherever I am. But typically you're not working out or anything, like nothing heavy, nothing major for the last 2 days. So show day is really just all about getting glammed up, getting ready. My division, I don't have a music routine, so I don't have to necessarily practice to any sort of specific type of music or any set music. I do practice my posing and, you know, make sure that I'm hitting everything like I should once I get on stage. But the day of show is really, I get up early, depending on whether I have to do my tan in the room or at the venue, you know, getting makeup done, hair done. Usually the shows start around 8:39, and so depending on the schedule and what time I have to be on stage, that'll determine how early I have to get up and how early I have to leave. But most shows I'm up no later than 7 a.m., 6 a.m., and just starting to get ready, getting the suit out, making sure that I pack my bag to take with me to the venue, and then head out. It's a long wait usually backstage. A lot of people, a lot of running and chaos, people trying to call numbers and line up. And so it can be kind of hectic backstage. So, you know, I usually just find a cozy spot and just hang out until it's time for me to line up. And then before we get on stage, usually there's a team backstage that's helping to, we call it glaze and glue. So they do like a light oil sheen on top of your spray tan. And then they'll glue, if you need it, they'll glue your suit to make sure that everything, like, stays in place where it's supposed to be. So usually, you know, around the hips, the waistband, any area that can kind of roll on your suit, they'll help you glue to make sure you're good before you go out. But the actual, I mean, we spend less than, altogether, maybe less than 5 minutes actually on stage. So you do your individual routine, you do your comparisons with everyone in your lineup. And then, you know, it's a very quick process. So not a whole lot of time actually on stage. Most of the day is actually, you know, backstage and preparing to actually go out. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. It's hard to explain it. until you've seen it. Like, I had a friend that came with me to my last show in Virginia. She actually helped me backstage with, like, hair and makeup and stuff. So she kind of got to see it firsthand, and she was just, like, blown away by so many things going on at one time and everyone just kind of in their own zone, but also, like, trying to pay attention. But, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, especially when you have a good group of people experiencing that show day, you know, all the show day chaos with you. It definitely, you know, definitely is a good time.
It definitely sounds like an interesting time right there. Like you said before, especially you mentioned about with all the chaos that's going on backstage. I wanted to ask you, when you had that, you mentioned about the experience that you had being in a beauty pageant. Would you compare being in a competition like that to a beauty pageant just in terms of everything, all of the moving parts that happens backstage, or is it not as chaotic in your opinion?
It's similar, but I think, at least my experience with the beauty pageant, it wasn't huge, right? It was only, I don't know, 12 of us versus a competition. You've got hundreds of athletes backstage because you've got men and women. You've got, you know, everyone's suitcases, and they've got, they usually put plastic, like, wrap all over the floors, and not plastic wrap, but, like, they, like, secure the floors and the walls with plastic because you have people that are, you know, doused in spray tan, so you can't mess up the walls and the floors and stuff. So you've got hundreds of people trying to find spots. People are pumping up, too. So before you go on stage, you usually have, like, resistance bands to help, like, make your muscles pop. So you got people doing push-ups in random spots. You got people trying to fix their hair and do their makeup and practice their walk. So it's just it's definitely more going, at least my experience, you know, versus the pageant with less than 20 people versus, you know, a backstage at a show. You got hundreds of athletes just, like, moving in and out, and you got people getting tanned, and the stage promoters or, you know, the stage coordinators are running up and down trying to find people. I think for me, my experience bodybuilding has been more chaotic, more going on, but it has a similar vibe in that you have, you know, you have a quick turnaround backstage to get ready. I would say it's a little bit different, too. In pageants, you have to do all these wardrobe changes, whereas bodybuilding, you're not really changing your wardrobe. You know, you're just, you know, you're in that same suit for the entire show. But, yeah, I would say it has a similar vibe, but I feel like competitions, you definitely, bodybuilding competitions, you have more people and more, a bit more going on backstage.
Solid. And you mentioned about the division that you compete in, and there's no music that goes along with the routine. Two-part question. First question is, what division do you compete in? And the second question is, what divisions are in the world of bodybuilding and fitness, and what are the differences?
Okay. Sure. So I compete in figure, and the different divisions are, for women, are bikini, wellness, figure, women's physique, and women's bodybuilding. So bikini and wellness are kind of similar, kind of not. Bikini would be your very streamlined, a lot smaller, you know, not a whole lot of muscle separation. Even when you think bikini athlete, you would think of like a Victoria's Secret model, in a sense, you know, not overly muscular, you know, very feminine, very fit. You can see that they work out, like, nice calf shoulders, but, you know, nothing is overpowering. For wellness, it's similar to bikini, but just bigger legs, bigger glutes. So it actually developed in South America. So, like, you think about, like, your Brazilians, your Latinas, like, that have that naturally, like, where their legs and glutes are a bit bigger. So that's kind of the look that wellness has, with the same upper body as bikini. So a nice petite upper body, but, like, you know, almost disproportionately big legs and glutes. And then figure, which is what I compete in, is a very symmetrical division, so almost think about like an X shape, so nice broad wide shoulders, tiny tapered waist, and then the legs come out to match the upper body. So It's not disproportionate at all. Everything should be nice and streamlined, but we're a bit bigger than, like, more muscular than bikini and wellness, a bit more separation, a bit more defined. And then you have women's physique, which is a few clicks up from bigger, so they're a bit bigger, a bit harder, a bit more striations, a bit leaner. And then women's bodybuilding is pretty much what the sport, you know, the bodybuilding, when you think, you know, bodybuilding, a lot bigger, really big, full of muscles, really deep separations, similar to what you would see in, like, men's bodybuilding as far as, like, size. And the symmetry is still there, too, but they're just, like, almost, like, unworldly massive. So a lot of times when you see women in that division, they've been competing for a really, really long time to put on that amount of size. And then you have the men's divisions. You have men's physique. You have classic physique. You have bodybuilding. You also have fitness, sorry. So fitness is in both. Well, fitness is actually only in women's, now that I think about it. But women's fitness, they have a routine, so they, it's almost like gymnastics, and they also compete in comparison rounds like figure. So they wear the same suit as a figure athlete for one round, and then they come out with their music and do, like, a full-out gymnastics routine in a costume. So that is another women's division. And the men have classic physique, men's physique, and bodybuilding, I think. I think that's it.
Wow, that is definitely a lot of divisions that they have separated. And I want to stay just with what you mentioned about with bodybuilding and bikini and figure and wellness. Do you think having a lot of those divisions, do you think it evens out the playing field, or do you think it's too much in terms of leveling out the competition?
I think it's good. I think when they initially added on, like, wellness is probably the newest division. And, I mean, they've added a couple new ones for men as well. I think classic physique was newer. But I think what it really was a adaptation to the way that the athletes in the sport were evolving. So for me, like, when I started out, I would not have been able to compete in bikini because I was already too muscular. You know, I would have had to lose muscle to be able to fit the bikini criteria. And the reality was, like, that would have been super hard for me to do that. So I think the divisions give people an opportunity to, you know, still train the way they want to train and look the way they want to look without having to, you know, sacrifice training and the aesthetic for fitting into an existing category. I think initially, like, any new division, like, even with wellness, it took them a while to, like, build up the caliber of athletes that they wanted in at the highest level and to actually, like, pinpoint exactly what they were looking for as far as judging and, you know, how to award the winners in that division. But I think once they got that nailed down, I think it was a pretty level playing, I would say level playing field, but I think it also gave athletes the space to fit into division more naturally versus, you know, having to force themselves into a different look that their genetics or that their training beforehand may not have lended them to. So I think it kind of created a lane for people that were in between divisions even. So, like, if you were a bikini but you struggled to bring your legs down, you know, it may have been a more natural fit for you to go into wellness. Or if you were a figure and you felt like, well, my legs are always massive in comparison to my upper body, so maybe I am better for wellness. I think all the different divisions just kind of, and what happens a lot of times too is someone that may start out as a bikini athlete training for 4 or 5 years may develop, you know, maybe not purposely, but may develop more muscularity than the division allows or than the division judges for. So they may find themselves transitioning into figure. And you see it a lot. You see a lot of people, you know, swap divisions or cross over to the different divisions because they've either outgrown where they were or they realize, like, hey, I'm genetically just, you know, better in this division. So, you know, I'm for it. I think it, you know, gives people a better fit for their goals and what they currently, you know, have going on.
Awesome. And I just want to stay with the different divisions for a moment. You mentioned that wellness was developed in South America to kind of complement the body types there. Mm-hmm. Have you seen not just the Bahamas, but people in the Caribbean embrace bodybuilding and figure more? I know in certain regions, there's still the attitude of women kind of, I hate to use this term, kind of staying in their place, remaining in the kitchen and not being allowed to work out. Are those old attitudes slowly drifting away, or are those attitudes still more prevalent, particularly in the Caribbean?
I think that fitness and health wellness is becoming more of a concern, you know, from a Caribbean standpoint. For sure. So I think you definitely have people, you know, being more encouraged to, even not from the, if not from the, you know, competing and bodybuilding side, but just like getting, you know, people out and moving more and more concerned about their health and more concerned about their physical activity. So that's definitely on the uptick because, I mean, if you look at the Bahamas, we're like ranked, I think, number two in the Caribbean for, you know, cases of obesity and NCDs, you know, and that's, you know, directly linked to our lifestyle, right? So I think you definitely have people that are, I think for the most part, the country and the Caribbean have shifted into recognizing the importance of exercise and the importance of fitness. I think when it comes to competing and bodybuilding, I mean, not, like, the sport itself is not for everybody, right? So, you know, I always tell people fitness and competing or fitness and bodybuilding are two different worlds. Like, being fit or having discipline in fitness and in your fitness regimen as a lifestyle is a completely different monster than, you know, talking about getting into the competitive space, into the bodybuilding space. And so, and it's still largely a space that unless you're in it, you don't really know all that it entails. And it's really hard to explain if you're not in it. But so I think from that standpoint, when you see, I mean, you do see a lot more Caribbean athletes popping up and participating in bodybuilding competitions. And I think for the most part, you know, at least here in the Bahamas, people are very supportive of it. You know, all the shows that I've been to locally have a really good turnout of, you know, supporters and fans of the sport. And so my experience with, you know, at least from the community aspect has always been really positive. You know, the newspapers, the, you know, the and the news, the TV stations and all that, they cover all the shows. And, you know, it's always in a positive light. When athletes go off to represent the country, it's always, you know, a big deal as well. So I think for the most part, like, the country itself has definitely embraced both fitness and bodybuilding. I think you do still have individuals, you know, that are a bit more old school, you know, saying they don't want women to be, you know, muscular and, you know, all of that. But I don't think that's going to necessarily go away. But I think the general idea and the general feeling of the country, the Caribbean, around fitness and around bodybuilding is pretty positive.
You mentioned about the Bahamas being number two in the Caribbean and obesity, and that's going to transition into the next thing I wanted to ask you about, food deserts. Mm-hmm. I know in North America, food deserts have become very prevalent, and you mentioned about just what the Caribbean has gone through in terms, as you mentioned, with the Bahamas having their issues with obesity. I want to ask you about food deserts. Are food deserts common in the Bahamas or not so much as opposed to North America?
Yeah, we definitely struggle. Like, that's a big concern for the country. We import 90% of our food. So, yeah. It's a challenge, you know, getting fresh food. We always complain about the produce, and I usually don't see it. You know, I mean, you see that it's not the best, but I can really tell whenever I go to another country and I look at their produce, I'm like, wow, this just looks, I mean, it looks so much better, right? And, you know, it's definitely overpriced. We're paying a lot more for food that isn't great quality, and so, yeah, I mean, just this year, we have a new administration in power as far as government, and I know that, you know, food and agriculture is one of their big tasks because, you know, we see that we're struggling with food security. And yeah, we gotta figure something out as a country, because yeah, access to good quality and affordable food is, you know, very rare.
You know, this is very eye-opening to me that you said that, because when I think of the Bahamas, and of course you mentioned that it's a very small island in the Caribbean. So when I think of the Caribbean, I think of fresh fruits and fresh vegetables. What do you think the reason is that there's a lack of access, like you said, to good quality food, or fresh food on the island? Is it because, I mean, you don't have to answer this question if you don't want to, but is it because of politics getting rid of, I guess, maybe farms or crops in order to, you know, build things? Or what do you think the reason is for that?
So keep it in mind. So the Bahamas is actually, it's an archipelago of islands. So it's not just one island. It's, I think, about 23 inhabited, but there's, you know, a bunch of little keys. Some are privately owned, some are government owned. So it's a collection of about 700 islands and keys in total. And a lot of the different islands, so I live in Nassau, New Providence, which is the capital. So the country of the Bahamas, with all the different islands, has a population of about 300,000 people, maybe a little more than that now. But just to give you context, so almost 200,000 of that number live in Nassau, New Providence, where I live, and the rest of that are sprinkled throughout the other, you know, 20-something islands that are inhabited. And so you have some of those smaller islands, like Eleuthera, very small population, but they're known for growing pineapple. So there are some industries, like Eleuthera has pineapples, Inagua has a salt industry. So we have some stuff that we do produce, but I think one of the challenges is that once we can't supply the demand from our local, you know, local farmers, like they can't supply the population demands solely, so we do need to import to supplement some of the stuff that they are producing. I think what you said, I don't think the land is an issue, honestly, because like I said, we have lots of land, we have all these keys and islands. I think it's the people as well. Like, you know, I think you have a lot of people that are actually interested in getting into the agricultural space. I think politics always has something to do with it too. But, you know, like I said, we have a new administration in now. And so I think even that in itself, like the changing of administrations every couple of years, I think slows things down too, because, you know, everyone's pushing their own agendas and their own ideas. They're not really picking up from the progress that the previous may have made in the past. So, I mean, I think it's a collection of things, but I don't think it's a shortage of land. I think the root of it is really a shortage of people that are interested in agriculture itself. And, like, you know, we have a school, so I think it's on Andrus called BAMSI, that is an agricultural and marine science, like, institute. And, you know, I know that they do some stuff as far as, like, producing crops and, you know, selling them in the markets in other islands as well. But the rate at which they produce, I know, is not enough to supply the population, which is why we have to bring in so much as well.
Well, Sally, thank you so much for answering that question. And you mentioned about doing their part to try to make sure fresh quality food is grown in the Bahamas. You're doing your part in the world of social media. How important, in your opinion, is social media presence to what you do in terms of getting the word out about fitness?
I mean, social media right now, so no matter what industry or, you know, space that you're in, we see everyone from government offices to, you know, fitness instructors, everyone's on social media because that's kind of where everyone is plugged into. If you have a message you want to get out, I think social media is, you know, important. But I think fitness especially, because it's such a, I don't want to say widely, well, yes, yeah, I guess that's the best way to say it. It's such a universal thing, right? No matter where you are, like some sort of fitness content is going to speak to you. And so when I started out, like, the nickname Bowflex Barbie was actually just a social media handle that later on developed into a business name. So social media has always been, you know, I've always enjoyed, personally enjoyed being on social media. So once I got into the fitness space, the fitness business, it just came really natural to continue to share. And then, you know, just developing strategies around, like, okay, what am I sharing and why am I sharing it? You know, what's the purpose of sharing what I am sharing? Who is it helping? Who is it for? What is the messaging? I think that's, you know, that's the biggest thing for me. How can I add value to people that are consuming what I am sharing? Yeah, for me, I mean, it's definitely given me the reach that I don't think I would have had if, it, you know, if I wasn't using social media. I don't think I would have been able to work with as many people for sure as I have been able to.
Awesome. And, you know, you mentioned about how so many companies and so many industries have taken advantage of social media. You've taken advantage of social media with your brand, Bowflex Barbie. Just tell everybody about Bowflex Barbie and what's available on the website as well as the YouTube channel.
Sure. So, yeah, Bowflex Barbie, I do through Bowflex Barbie, Bowflex Barbie Fitness. I do both in-person here in Nassau as well as online training. I have online challenges, online programs, both on-demand and through my app. And like you mentioned, I also have a YouTube channel, which is Bowflex Barbie Fit TV, and that's pretty much just a resource of train-along workouts that can be done at home with minimal equipment. And, yeah, that's pretty much what I do. I do corporate programming here in Nassau as well. I do virtual sessions, pretty much all things fitness, online, in person, and, yeah, through the app and through YouTube.
Awesome. Tell everybody where they can find you, Dekel, on social media and any websites. Let them know that as well.
Sure. So my social media is, my personal is at Bowflex Barbie. My team page is at team.bowflexbarbiefitness. Website is bowflexbarbie.com and the YouTube channel is Bowflex Barbie Fit TV.
Awesome. Two more questions before I let you go. Very lighthearted questions. First question mm-hmm. is, we know Nassau is known to be a great city with lots of things to do. In your opinion, what makes Nassau Freeport different from other cities in the Caribbean?
Okay. So in all fairness, I've not been to a whole lot of other – I've not physically been to a whole lot of other Caribbean countries, but – what I can say about, you know, about Freeport, about the Bahamas in general, because like I said, it's a number of islands that I've had the opportunity to visit within the country. I've island hopped quite a bit. So what I love about the Bahamas and what I think sets it apart from a lot of other countries in the Caribbean is that you have that uniqueness of each island. Like if you want the party life, you want, you want a selection of restaurants and casinos and, you know, lots of things to do, then Nassau is definitely the place. Versus if you want to just, like, walk out from your back door of your Airbnb and set foot on a sandy beach and there's nobody for miles and miles, then an Exuma or an Eleuthera may be a better fit for you. Freeport, to me, where I grew up, is a good mix of the two. So Freeport doesn't have a huge population, but it is very well laid out. It was meant to be the industrial hub for the country, so it's very well planned out, very well laid out, but it's quiet enough to where you can still escape and relax, but there's a bit more to do than an Eleuthera or an Exuma. You have some islands that only have literally one road, that have no stop signs, like, you know, so you have that real island experience on some islands, like no fast food, no franchises versus a Nassau that has like 13 Wendy's, you know, like all these huge casinos. So I think what's great about the Bahamas, if you can come into, fly into Nassau, hop on a boat for a couple hours and be at another island that is a complete, you know, different vibe, complete different experience. And so I like to say that, you know, the Bahamas has an island for everybody. There's some people that love that, you know, that luxury space, that love, you know, the partying, a lot of things to do, want to keep going. Like, Nassau is definitely for them, But the person that wants to literally just unplug and reset and sit on the beach and, you know, unwind and, like, really escape that hustle and bustle, there's also an island or islands that allow them to do that. There's stuff that are, you know, for nature lovers that want to swim with sharks or go bird watching or, like, you know, so many stuff, different things that the country has to offer through the different islands. And I think that's what makes it a bit more unique than your other islands in the Caribbean.
Awesome. And New Orleans has Mardi Gras. Rio de Janeiro has Carnival. Barbados has Cropover. A lot of countries and a lot of cities have their take on Mardi Gras or Carnival. The Bahamas has Junkanoo. Can you explain to the listeners what Junkanoo is and when does it take place?
Sure. So, Junkanoo is, it's hard to describe, but it is the best way the best thing to compare it to would be probably like your carnival in Brazil. But it's different in that as far as the costumes and like you're in the street, you know, it's a big parade. You have different groups that come out, but everything is played, so all instruments versus your carnival and stuff where you have, you know, the trucks playing music and the groups coming out in their costumes. Junkanoo is completely, you actually have a full band out there Junkanoo group out there playing. So you got the goatskin drums, you got the brass, you got the cowbells, you got the costumes that they've been working on for the whole year, because Junkanoo happens in Nassau, at least they do New Year's Day and Boxing Day, so the day after Christmas and New Year's Day. There's two parades. You have your groups, so there's committees for these groups. They practice. They have choreographed dancers that practice year-round. They make costumes from cardboard and crepe paper. And, you know, these are some huge costumes that you have guys pushing and headpieces, and they do laps downtown. So the parade usually starts at like midnight and it runs all the way into like, I don't know, 6, 7 a.m. the following morning. And people line the streets. They put out bleachers. They put out, you know, seating for people to come out and actually watch the parade as it's happening. The TV stations also broadcast it live. So, you know, but it's one of those things, again, like, it's hard to explain it. You just kind of got to experience it, because it's one of those things, like, when you're in that street and those groups come through, like, that sound of the drums, like, right there just gets into your soul. Like, you can't keep still. But it's definitely, it's a sight to see. Like, the music is one thing, and then it's a show. You know, you got people out there dancing and putting on a show, and the costumes are beautiful, the concepts. Each group usually has a theme, so the themes are different every year. The music is different. It's our cultural, our thing, you know?
Wow, sounds like a very festive time. And you heard it from Ashiz Dekel Quant. She is a entrepreneur, also a competitor, philanthropist. Also, she's a social media personality, also doing her part to make her island a better place and make the world a better place. One more time, tell everybody where they can find you on social media and websites. Let them know that as well.
Sure. So my Instagram is at BowflexBarbie. My website is BowflexBarbie.com, and I'm on YouTube at BowflexBarbieFitTV.
Dekel, this was a lot of fun. Thank you so much again for taking time out of your busy schedule. And if ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. We'll be back with more right after this.
I'm Bowflex Barbie. We're going to start with, I'm going to explain to you what we're doing today. We've got 8 movements. We're going to start with our warm-up, and then we're going to dive right into our first 2 movements. All right. Here we go. You are prepared at home as well. All right, so we're going to start our warm-up. You can go back. I'm going to position. Start with arm swings.
Yeah.
Up and down. 1. Good. 2.
We all make more than 35,000 decisions a day. Most are small, but some can be life-changing.
When it comes to taking care of yourself, the most important choices can be hard to make. Like having a tough conversation instead of ignoring a buddy's call.
Or being there for support, not assuming things will just get better.
Or fighting through challenges rather than giving up.
And while we all face thousands of choices every day, there's one that can make all the difference. Today, make the decision to be there for the veterans in your life, for your community, for yourself. Learn more at betheforveterans.com.
All right, everybody, that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. Once again, a big special thank you to Dekel Quant, the personal trainer, competitor, broadcaster, entrepreneur, and philanthropist from the Bahamas. Again, a big special thank you to Dekel for taking time out of her busy schedule to be with us on the program. And check her out on the World Wide Web. It's BowflexBarbie.com. Until next time, everybody, I'm Ed Robinson. Remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out. Peace.